Do you feel like there's something happening in your home or business? Something you can't explain? Do you think that whatever is happening seems to be paranormal? Do they exist? Florida Ghost Hunters at FloridaGhostHunters.com are looking for haunted locations throughout Central Florida. Let the team at Florida Ghost Hunters investigate your paranormal experience. Their mission is to disprove a haunting with science, to find a reasonable explanation to a problem, and whatever is left becomes evidence. FloridaGhostHunters.com. If you've experienced paranormal activity in your home or business, you are urged to visit FloridaGhostHunters.com and click Need Help. FloridaGhostHunters.com.
Interested in ghosts, UFOs? How about the occult? Are you psychic? Would you like to find out? Well, if you're intrigued by the world's curiosities and all that is paranormal, then Paralore.com is a place for you. Create your own profile, start a photo album, write a blog, or just hang out and watch countless hours worth of paranormal videos while chatting with other Paralore members. Who knows? You could win a prize or two if you're quick and brave enough. It's all here, and it's all free. Visit www.paralore.com and join today. Again, membership is free, and we know you won't be disappointed.
Paralore.com. Unlock your mind.
Don't lay with the ghost by my side. Let the birds take to the sky. Gonna try and climb the drink the river dry. May the ghost lay by my side.
Podcast. Check us out twice a month where we will be discussing our most recent paranormal investigations here in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
You can find us at www.sepsparanormal.podshow.com or go to our website, sepsparanormal.org.
Or you can subscribe through iTunes. Just type in Seps Paranormal in the search field. Come by and check us out.
Yeah.
listening to Ghostly Talk.
Latitude 33, Key to the Kingdom, is an investigation into arcane science and engineering at the world's most famous theme park. Was there an interdimensional portal that influenced human perception at the popular amusement park? This book reveals surprising evidence that something otherworldly was built into the Magic Kingdom. The website is http://stores.lulu.com/lostcontinental. Lost Continent Live.
Yeah.
We've got a link at ghostlytalk.com.
Yeah, a little bit easier. Yeah.
And we would love to welcome Walter Bosley to Ghostly Talk. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
Yes, it's good to have you on. And this is the first time we've ever got to talk about something like this.
And this is really interesting because I have to say we have also on the phone the third. There's three hosts of Ghostly Talk.
Yeah, and Bonnie.
And
yeah.
Bonnie is by far.
If she wasn't coughing her lungs out right now, I'm sure she'd be much more excited.
the Magic Kingdom.
I am excited, though.
And all things Disney are near and dear to the heart of Bonnie as well as every American, I would think. But So, Walter, what? Wow, this is just an amazing book on the stuff that you know, you hear little rumors, little this, little
you hear
that.
All kinds of
you
stuff.
Hear little things, you know, but you put it all together. So what was your what was your motivation for it?
Well, I'm still, as a matter of fact, putting it together because this book opened up it opened up a huge door that I've been that I went through a little over a year ago, and it's been like being in Wonderland, believe me. But I had experienced what I talk about early in the book, at Disneyland in 81, and over the years, as generally strange things happen in my experience with extraordinary phenomena, things related to this would pop up, and I just, you know, I wanted to explore it, and in exploring it, I have a past as a criminal investigator, so I have that investigative mind, you know, there's a truth there, at the risk of sounding like Mulder, you know, there's a truth there, and, you know, I tend to want to get at it, you know, I want to see, okay, what's going on here? And I approached it with the I am approaching it with the same point of view as I would when I was a federal agent. If I was going after somebody who, you know, had passed a counterfeit 20 or maybe stolen national secrets or just committed, you know, some type of fraud, you know, there's some point there. You're trying to get at the facts, and that's what drove me. But what originally motivated me was I just wanted to understand what had happened to me because I knew and believed that something extraordinary had happened.
And this is the experience with this, with the, what is it, Old Man Alfred? Is that who you're referring to?
Yeah, Alfred, the Old Man Alfred that I met at Disneyland, about 27 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
What happened here?
going back, you guys were probably born about that time?
Oh, not me. I was born.
I don't think Disney was born when Doug was born.
Yeah, okay.
I'm a bit on the older side, but.
You are? Okay.
Yeah. Not that old.
So am I. I was in high school, senior year of high school, and went to Disneyland with some friends. Now, being a Southern Californian, we go to Disneyland a lot. You know, I've been going there since I was like 5 years old. I loved the place, especially then. And went with a bunch of high school friends, and somewhere a little after 9 o'clock, somewhere between 9 and 9:30 p.m., we decide, hey, you know, we've ridden everything else several times. Oh, by the way, this was in the days where they still had the ticket books. This is kind of important to the story.
Okay.
As I learned later, they still had the ticket books back then, but they were beginning to sell the passport ticket, which was the original unlimited use ticket at Disneyland, which is what standard the entry fee is now. Admission
right.
is.
Yeah.
But back then you had to buy the passport, and just to keep things simple, you know, you always had to pull out your ticket. So, you know, we got in the habit, like a lot of people, of just pinning the ticket on your shirt or something, like a kindergartner, you know, just so you, it's there, they can see it, and go about your way, keep your hands free.
Yeah.
I had my ticket, you know, pinned, you know, with my little Donald Duck pin that I bought to do so. And we'd ridden everything else. We'd been there all day. We'd say, hey, let's go ride the carousel. So we hopped on the carousel, and as we're going around, I see this old man in a black suit, you know, suit coat, pants, white shirt, no tie, snow white hair, kind of close cropped, you know, not a buzz cut, but not real long, and a kind of a close cut beard, white, snow white, and he looked to me to be about 70 years old, and he was just watching the carousel go round and round, and he just stood out. He was standing, if you're familiar with Disneyland in Anaheim, uh-huh. he was standing in that pathway between Mr. Toad's Wild Ride and the Dumbo Ride, which leads back to where the Matterhorn is.
Uh-huh.
And he was standing, you know, that area, and the last time we went around, I noticed he was gone, you know, didn't think much of it, but my friends and I got off the carousel. We headed back on that path to go deeper into the park in that direction, and there was this man sitting on a bench there by himself. I don't know what compelled me, but I was moved to go up and approach him and make small talk. He told me his name was Alfred, and this was his first time at Disneyland. He'd never been there before. He just seemed to be in a state of wonder, and that's important, too, later, as I learned. He just seemed to be in a complete state of wonder. Like
I think we all are when we go there. Just a couple months, I'm starting to cut you off, Walter.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know how it is. So
yeah, so I'm like, where the hell am I going?
I wonder if I'm going to make it back safe.
Yeah.
So we got to talking and found out that he was out of tickets. I think he had an A ticket left, which would get him on Small World. And
uh-huh.
and again, you know, I felt like, well, let's go ride Small World with Alfred. So I had two friends with me, two witnesses to this, and we went and rode It's a Small World with this old man. Now, you know, we're jaded, you know, we're making jokes about, you know, going insane, you know, because of the song going over and over again.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know how it is. He's sitting there just looking at everything like, wow, this is amazing. This is amazing. So we get off Small World. We start heading back, and the park's going to be closed in a little over an hour. He's out of tickets, and, you know, I've been there a million times, going to go there again. So I told him, I said, hey, here you go. I took my passport and I pinned it to his coat lapel. I said, with this, you can get on anything as many times as you want. You got over an hour before the park closes. Go see whatever it is you weren't able to ride and go see whatever you want to do. This guy, this old guy, just his eyes got big and he grinned and he was just elated that I would give him my ticket. And, you know, my friends thought, oh, what a great guy, you know, and got the warm fuzzy, ha, 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 and, you know, something nice for somebody and
yeah.
all that. And I did. I felt, you know, good that, you know, this old man, he probably never would come back there again, you know. And off he went. And he headed off in the direction of Fantasyland. He went back into Fantasyland. We headed off to Tomorrowland and, you know, on with the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
So, it was something that I carried with me, the memory of this enigmatic old white-haired man named Alfred, you know, 70-year-old guy who I met oddly one night at Disneyland. So about 11 years passed. By this time, I'm working for the FBI in Manhattan, and on my lunch break, I go down to the Coliseum bookstore there at near Columbus Circle. And as usual, I'm looking in the paranormal books. And I come across this book about ley lines. Now, all I knew about ley lines at that point was about 5 years before I had heard about ley lines because some guys who had done some ley line and other strange phenomena research had associated the intersections, the ley lines, with pockets of high phenomena activity. In other words, the they were claiming the intersection of these ley lines was where it seemed to be, where they found in records is the place where more UFO reports, more hauntings, more weird things were happening than in any other spot. And I was intrigued with the idea, but, you know, back then, yeah, I didn't know much about it, and it was just kind of something I had filed away. So here was this book on ley lines called The Old Straight Track. And, you know, I'm looking at it and go, oh, this is a book written by the guy who discovered these things and first wrote about them in 1925.
Mm.
And so I'm looking at the front of the book, and I look at the name, Alfred T. Watkins, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting. I open the book up, and there's a picture of the man, and it was weird. This cold chill went up my spine because I was looking at the face of the man I had met in Disneyland.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Now, the freakiest thing about it is that Alfred Watkins died in 1935.
Oh.
And when he discovered the ley line system and was investigating them, he was 69 years old. So he was about 70.
Uh-huh.
And he had the white hair, the kind of close-cut white beard. And, you know, I'll tell you today, I believed then, and I swear today, that this is the guy I saw. I mean, he was a doppelganger, a double. In the book and later on, you know, I go into what and who and what I think Alfred indeed was.
Uh-huh.
But that was him.
So... That has to have become, like, a defining experience. I mean, it sounds to me like, you know, Alfred not only discovered them, but he's still investigating them. You know,
yeah, you know,
Well, as I say later in the book, I think what I encountered, and I'll get into that later a little bit, but I think that there's three or four, there's three really possible options of what I experienced.
Okay.
And one of them is that it was the real Alfred Watkins. Transported, but
right.
we'll get into that later. But what was interesting was after that, my actual defining experience in my life was in December of 1979, shortly before this,
uh-huh.
in which I woke up one morning and everything was different. The first thing I did was look at my hands and I said, "These aren't my hands." And I looked around the room and everything seemed more three-dimensional. From, you know, it was as if I woke up that morning a different person inside this body. Pretty weird.
Ooh.
And I you know, I wasn't a drinker. I never did drugs, anything like that. You know, I was a pretty dorky kid. And I woke up, I went through the house, and I saw my sisters. And I said, well, those are the sisters, but they're not my sisters. I saw my mom and dad, and I'm like, well, yeah, that's like this body's mom, but that's not my mom.
Yeah.
Things like that. You know, a psychiatrist would love this. Would say, "Oh, you experienced some type of traumatic disassociation." You know, okay, whatever.
Right.
Sure, I'll buy that. And that was kind of a doorway that opened. Which, and I'll tell you flat out, I've said it before. I've written it. I believe in the book. I define my life or divide my life between before that event and after that event. After the person I am today is the person I woke up being that morning, and my life is divided between those two things. So there is a connection between the two, but then I wouldn't have this encounter with Alfred and this strange encounter at Disneyland.
Uh-huh.
But through the 80s, the point of all that was through the 80s I was beginning to experience, after the experience with Alfred, beginning to experience more and more extraordinary phenomena, strange phenomenal manifestations and experiences and things.
Okay.
And so I was kind of used to the weirdness in my life, but still, when I'm looking at the picture of this guy in this book, I thought, okay, this is a biggie among several things I'd already experienced. So.
Well, that's just one of those classic situations. You know, we've heard these stories where people end up bumping into someone like that, and you know that you're what you just told us is just one of those ones where it just sends a chill down my spine always. But you
Yeah.
I think it's a positive thing though too. It's you know, it isn't supposed to be creepy or weird or anything like that.
Right.
It's something that happened that you have to acknowledge. Right?
Yeah.
And it's obvious that you've done that. You've done it tenfold. You've written
and then investigated.
Yeah.
But you know what?
Oh, God, if you only knew what I've accepted in my
life.
Boy. You know, the other aspect of it is, and again, I'll talk about it a little later when we get to that part of the discussion, if this is a case of a man making some type of discovery on a scientific level and through his empirical exploration was able to do this, then this is not some evil thing from the devil. This is like when, you know, humans first learn to fly or, you know, first use x-rays. It's something that we take for granted that at one time, was magic in the realm of the devil. We should leave it alone.
And, yeah.
Yeah, certainly.
Interesting. Do you know what else, when you described your the defining moment in December of 79, the waking up, feeling disassociated from the body you woke up in, or, you know, this bizarre feeling. It's so interesting because I've heard over and over and over and over and over until I'm just nauseous thinking about it, how people say that you're going to eventually one day, especially when they talk about December 21st, 2012, they say there's going to be an awakening, a spiritual awakening,
yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And everything's going to be different. And I just, I think you're the first person who
all
said that they...
all wear white socks now instead of black socks.
That's the thing, is I always thought, well, you know, sure, someone might understand something, or you might get a moment of clarity or whatever, but for the most part, everything should be about the same.
Yeah.
But your story, Walter, is like the first one that I've heard, and I talk to a lot of people, and the first one I heard who says, oh, no, this has been like this since that moment that I realized that I'm a different person. You know, wow.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, maybe there was some kind of early awakening for you or whatever, or a spiritual development or whatever it is, and then we're all going to have to go through that.
This is a true defining moment. That's basically what
a true defining moment.
You know, I went through the gamut of what it possibly could have. I was quiet about it for years. It was something that I kept to myself and didn't tell anyone about because, you know, it could be pretty nutty, you know, in some people's eyes. But, I mean, imagine, I'm a teenage kid, you know, and then my the next year after that, my parents were getting divorced, so there was, you know, tumult in the family. And so, you know, they were focused on other things. I wasn't about to, say, you know, hey, I had a weird experience, when everyone else is going nuts over real-world things.
Right.
Absolutely, I definitely believe it was, as well as being an awakening and the opening of a doorway, you know, I went, as I said, to get back onto what I was saying.
Yeah.
I tend to meander sometimes.
Oh, we do too. It's all part of getting to know you. Yeah.
Is that I went through the gamut. Like, for instance, it's been said that, you know, oh, you were abducted by aliens. Well, I got to tell you, I do believe people have been abducted by aliens. I believe, unfortunately, that a lot of these cases you hear about, quite frankly, are a bunch of crap.
Right.
You know, it's to get attention. You know, it's to get in the media. That's an industry, that whole ET hypothesis thing.
I agree.
And I've never believed, and I don't believe now, that it was an abduction that happened in the night, and that's what changed me. I do not believe that. A man whose books I've published, and who is one of the, you know, sources I went to for this book, he's convinced that I was. I've never felt that I was. At one point, I learned about the concept of a walk-in, you know, a soul.
Yeah.
Walk into a body when, and I thought, well, maybe the soul that was born in this body wanted to leave, so rather than kill the body so the soul can leave this plane and all that stuff, maybe who I am walked in that night and took over the body. And I thought that for a while, and then I thought, there's something else. And finally, and I hate to say this, but I'm not prepared to talk about it publicly yet.
No problem.
But over the years, I've put together, eventually I'll get to it, but over the years, and particularly recently, I've come to a reason to believe that I know exactly what happened, and it is just as astonishing as an alien abduction, as a walk-in. It would boggle your mind. But I'm still doing the backup research for it to, you know.
Yeah, well, it'll be very interesting to see what you come up with that. But meanwhile, going back to the... Oh, I'm
sorry. That's cool. No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just thinking back to the Magic Kingdom. The
yeah, yeah, come in before we go to break. I'd like to...
The title of the book, Latitude 33, that is... So I take it's laying on at least that... That's one imaginary line, right? Or one line that you cannot see would be the latitude line. There'd also be a longitude line. And then there's ley lines, which ley lines are different. I mean, they don't have to go, as far as I know, they don't have to be, you know, latitude or longitude.
Yeah,
they can
yeah.
go.
And I want to make the distinction later after the break that the way we're using ley lines, because what it really means is what we're actually talking about is something other than straight paths between ancient megalithic sites, although that's involved.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, there's also powerful places. Like, I mean, you could have built something in Sedona. Everybody who's been to Sedona, Arizona, like, nobody has said, oh, I went to Sedona, and it was just a place.
Those are the kind of sites that are more in line with what we're talking about. I'm using the term ley line just because it's so familiar with people and they get the concept quickly. But it is. It's called massive concentration. It's natural energy lines that flow through the geography.
Interesting. Is it? Do you know how many minutes do we have? Because
I like two or one.
Okay, good. Well, all right. I can ask 1 minute.
I'll give you
question,
two.
Because suddenly I'm like really perked up. I have to say the.
I'm glad you are.
Is it related? So geography, but is it related to like? Is it just related in general to place on Earth? Could there be two next to each other, or are they, for example? You know, just because of the mountains to the east and then the ocean to the west and something, you know, what picks these places or does the place pick itself?
Oh, it's part of the geomorphology of the Earth itself. It's part of the makeup of the planet and planets in general and just how planets form and just their natural chemistry, their natural composition. This network of lines exists. It's all part of what allows there to be an atmosphere for life to exist, and it is something that can be tapped into. You know, it's like this: electricity. Science still cannot explain exactly what electricity is, but we know how to use it, and we use it a lot. But we still don't really know exactly what it is.
So perhaps somebody, when designing the Disneyland parks, were like, you know what? There's this property we can use. You know, I do want to talk about that. Unfortunately, it's going to have to be...
Well, I want to comment here. I just said something really stupid, too, and I want to take it back.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no, you said, I'm starting to perk up here, right?
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'm glad somebody is.
And
Walter, I want to apologize because that may have come across the wrong way, you know? And I didn't mean it like that at all. We're both very sick right now.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I've been married twice. I'm worse to worse than both.
Well, no, I just wanted to make that clear. I felt bad at her. Like,
yeah.
Oh, that was stupid.
Yeah, that was sort of an
no problem.
That was sort of an inside thing.
Yeah,
you know,
we were both like,
because you would have had to have heard the previous half hour in order to understand what.
Okay,
that
so
was.
I'll try not to. I'm going to really try to insult Walter after the break.
Yeah,
we'll really go
on.
After.
I want to throw out the website.
Yeah,
real quick.
Yeah.
Stores.lulu. That's lulu.com/lostcontinentlive. Of course, there's also a link at ghostlytalk.com.
Yeah,
that.
Definitely.
And there
permanently,
will be forever. But,
permanently.
Yeah, we have to. This is the break with Bonnie Vent, right?
Yeah, we're going to do the paranormal news. When we come back from that, we're going to be talking about the Disneyland device.
I can't wait.
This is going to be really interesting. We'll be right back after this.
Ghostly Talk!
Beacons of Tomorrow presents Deconstructing Fireflies, a post-apocalyptic short story by the Ghostman and Demon Hunter shows Nathan Schoonover and Christy Peterson. Bees are real, birds are not. Deer heads rot on rooftops under the blazing sun. Chickens explode, and one stricken little boy searches in unlikely places for the souls of the mechanical animals his father creates. This unsettling tale is now available in the speculative fiction anthology Beacons of Tomorrow, second collection. Buy your copy at TyrannosaurusPress.com, Amazon.com, Tower.com, and most online book retailers now. Beacons of Tomorrow, second collection. It's a vision of the future so grotesque, you won't be able to look away.
Welcome to Paranormal News on Ghostly Talk Radio. Paranormal News is produced by Genesis Creations Entertainment. I'm your host, Bonnie Vance. Are you looking for Halloween decorations and collectibles? San Diego Paranormal is an affiliate for Sideshow Collectibles and Collectibles Today. From the Munsters to Scary Movie and even Pirates of the Caribbean, we've got you covered. How about a statue of Elvira for your desk? please go to www.sdparanormal.com and look for Sideshow Collectibles and Haunted Collectibles on the left-hand navigation bar. Mark Steinis of Entertainment Tonight sat down with Jennifer Love Hewitt to talk about the fire at Universal Studios a few months ago and the new season of The Ghost Whisperer. Here's a clip.
Tell me about this episode that we're going to see Friday night. And the strange coincidence that kind of all happened around
it. We were getting ready to send out our scripts the day that the backlot here at Universal caught on fire for our episode Firestarter, which is all about this girl who starts fires in Grandview and does all of this stuff. And then the news happened. I could see the smoke and everything. And so I came down and I was like, what's on fire? What's on fire? You know, because this is like a home for us.
Yeah.
And when they said the town square, I was like, that's Grandview.
How much was in jeopardy getting this season back together, knowing that you lost one of the major parts of the show?
It was really hard because we loved filming on the back lot, and it was a part of our history. We felt really lucky because it was Back to the Future's place in the first place, and so we just felt great when we got it. On a whole level, for Universal, it's obviously much more devastating for the studios than it was for us personally. But, you know, it was tough because now we've had to sort of move Grandview. Grandview's going to look a little different this year to people.
Was it ever in jeopardy to get this first episode on the air?
I thought that we were going to have to delay for a while, and they were able to sort of just, you know, pick things up pretty quickly, get us back going. I will say this about this season. I don't think we've ever had a season this big on this show. We are going to shock the audience like you wouldn't believe. And people have to remember that not everything on Wisteria Lane is as it seems, not everything in Grandview is as it seems.
Our last story comes from Cake.com. Wichita's Cowtown Museum has brought in the Wichita Paranormal Research Society, hoping to nab some evidence to the mysterious activity many say they've experienced at Cowtown. Here's a clip.
Well, it's a ghost hunt, Old West style, all part of an event at Cowtown, and you'll be able to experience it this Halloween. Case Natasha Tropa has more on how the museum is hoping to give you a closer encounter with history. Natasha.
That's right, Larry. The museum brought in the Wichita Paranormal Research Society overnight, hoping to nab some evidence to the mysterious activity many say they've experienced at Cowtown, and that evidence will be revealed during the haunted historical Cowtown event.
Can you give us a sign of your presence?
It's a lot of room to cover, and there's so much history that, you know, we really get excited about it.
It's not Halloween yet, but for members of the Wichita Paranormal Research Society, seeking out ghostly encounters is part of the everyday grind.
We take a more scientific approach. We try to have equipment to back up any kind of experiences.
The team's current mysterious focus, Cowtown. As the museum gets ready for its haunted historical Cowtown event, it called in the team to investigate the area.
A lot of visitors, the first thing they ask are the buildings haunted?
Volunteer Sherry Gaskins has had her own encounters with the unknown at Cowtown.
And the back candlestick came up out of the candelabra, up over the top of the others, and fell on the floor in front of the table.
She hopes the team's investigations will give some thrills, chills, and answers during this year's Halloween event. So, armed with everything from electromagnetic frequency recorders to infrared cameras, the team sets out checking every dark corner of Cowtown.
We have caught some audio, and we have caught some photographs.
It takes a lot of patience, an open mind, and even more patience from this team.
We must catch EVPs, which are recordings that you don't hear them with your naked ear.
While the results of the night won't be revealed until later in October, this investigation is filled with strange bumps, whispers, and devices recording, well, something you just can't explain.
You never know what they might capture.
For more information on these stories, please go to www.sdparanormal.com and the Paranormal News feed page. Don't forget, sign up for a free subscription to Paranormal News. Thanks for joining us today on Paranormal News. If you'd like to sponsor or advertise on Paranormal News, please send us an email at parax.news@aol.com. You can listen to Paranormal News on Ghostly Talk Radio at www.ghostlytalk.com. Please check out their other fine shows. Or you can join us at paranormalnews.mypodcast.com. Until next time, I'm your host, Bonnie Vance.
The television screen is the retina of the mind's eye. Therefore, television is reality, and reality is less than television.
To see the wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz. And can't you tell, I'm really excited to see the wonderful Wizard of Oz.
I think we need some extra vitamin B for this.
We need something.
Yeah. We've been down for a week. Someone finally successfully took the host of Ghostly Talk down for a week.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so, Walter, you're still there with us, sir. All right.
Yep.
We're talking about Latitude 33, Key to the King. Key to the Kingdom.
Yep.
This is the book that you wrote about what you found about Disneyland. Just wow. I mean, where do you even? I mean, we got to know you in the last half hour.
Yeah.
And you know what? I
want to dive into this Disneyland device. I really want. I mean, I don't.
Alrighty.
Let's get into this. I'm sorry, Doug. I'm not.
Did
trying to
they
kick
sit down and like I picture a whole bunch of people sitting down and going, okay, we here's what we need to do to make a successful theme park. I mean, but you know, did they?
It's
have,
all
like,
marketing, right, Walter?
Did they have tall wizard hats on?
You know, they might as well have had, particularly the man who engineered it. The origin of Disneyland is something that's, you know, talked about on a certain level, superficial level in all the biographical material about Walt Disney, and they even did a TV series of the building of it, and you can refer to those sources for, you know, those basics, and it's a great story. I mean, just all this weird stuff aside, particularly if you like Disneyland. Where it relates to this is that the Disney brothers, they wanted to do it right. They wanted to have a successful venture. Walt, of course, believed in it, and he was a genius, you know, for doing so.
Yeah.
And Roy, you know, kind of helped make it happen by working with the money guys. But before they did anything, before they broke ground, they had to decide where to build it. They weren't sure. They knew they wanted it in Southern California, of course, but Walt's original idea was to build it across the street from their studio facility in Burbank, and it was going to be a much smaller park. So they went to one of the think tanks, engineering think tanks at the time, SRI, Stanford Research Institute, and... Stanford Research Institute recommended several places around Southern California. They recommended San Diego. They recommended closer into L.A. They even recommended Riverside, but also Anaheim. And they projected that Anaheim would be the very best place. Now, the Disneys liked what they were hearing, and... SRI assigned a guy named C.V. Wood, Cornelius Vanderbilt Wood, and he was one of their engineers, and he fell in love with the project, and so much so that he got himself hired away from SRI by Disney to be the chief engineer, design engineer of the park. And this is the guy, and I go into this more in the book, but he had a really interesting background where an interest in extraordinary phenomena is concerned. It's psychic phenomena.
Okay.
So you got a guy who's already interested into this stuff, and he sees an opportunity. Now, SRI, for those who don't know, Stanford Research Institute, they're one of these engineering think tanks, and they've been behind some pretty amazing technology, backscatter radar, GPS, and it was SRI guys who originally developed scientific remote viewing, which a lot of your listeners, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, very much.
Yeah, that's where that came from.
Okay.
Was SRI originally. And so here you have an organization that's kind of aware of things like this, and particularly where GPS is concerned, here's an organization who, if anyone would know anything about the electromagnetic spectrum of the Earth and mascons and what we call ley lines, natural energy lines coursing through the Earth, it's going to be SRI.
Uh-huh.
And within SRI, if there's any guy in their firm that's going to be into it, C.B. Wood's going to be one of them because he's already into the strange phenomenon. So you got the marriage of that. You got the guy who's interested in it working for the organization that certainly knows about these things. So
That
goes to explain how and who knew about the ley lines running through Southern California that intersected. See, there's an intersection of three. It's the biggest intersection of natural ley lines, energy lines, coursing through Southern California.
Okay?
There's other intersections of two, but this is an intersection of three, and it is smack dab in the property where Disneyland was built. And this is the specific piece of property that C.V. Wood and SRI strongly urged the Disneys to purchase and build their park on.
Mm.
So with that said, you know, Disney said, okay, yeah, and there was, admittedly, there's a lot of other information they were given. Like, you know, they looked at growth, economic growth, and they said, look, this Orange County is going to be exploding. There's, you know, the center of population is going to be there, and it's a good central location for all of Southern California to come to your park. It's just a smart move to put it in Orange County, specifically Anaheim. So, you know, there's a lot of other reasons that went into this, but engineering-wise, C.V. Wood, you know, suggested that be built specifically on that ground. Now, to get into what he did to make this device, Disneyland, if for those who don't know, is built in a bowl, okay? They dug a bowl out of the earth in a bunch of orange groves, and it's kind of in a shape of a triangle with rounded corners.
Okay.
Imagine an upside-down triangle with the point down if you're looking at it overhead.
All right.
And they dug into the ground and built up a berm around the outside edge. Now, they did this for, you know, for things like perspective, because, you know, it lends to the experience of being away from the outside world when you're in Disneyland, because when you look to the horizon, you don't see anything but sky beyond what's in Disneyland.
Okay.
In most areas of Disneyland. And what this did was create an artificial gravity well type of situation. Now, for those who are into physics, what we're talking about here is something that's an artificial gravity well, okay, with an intersection of three ley lines in the heart of it. And if you really want to know the science and technology, I recommend you read a book called The Handprint of Atlas by Sesh Hari, H-E-R-I, which is coming out in around October 18th, I believe. And that explains everything that I'm talking about here.
Uh-huh.
And it specifically talks about the Disneyland ley lines as well. But if you want to talk the science about it, go read that book. I'm not a physicist. They dug this bowl, which creates an artificial gravity well, and they put smack dab over the intersection of the ley lines, they put Fantasyland where the intersection is, and they put the carousel right on top of the intersection of ley lines.
Okay.
Now, the carousel is a spinning device, and as I say in the book, if you study the works of the work of John Keeley and Victor Schauberger and Nikola Tesla, you learn a lot about how a rotating spinning device placed in certain key areas has an effect on physics, on geophysics and other forms of physics, to include metaphysics.
Okay.
if you're familiar with the bell, the Nazi device called the bell, which actually they took from ancient science, it's the same kind of principle, a spinning device. Now, by putting the carousel on the intersection of the three ley lines, they have a spinning device where these energies are at a very strong union. And the way the park was designed is, with the carousel spinning, it redistributes that energy throughout the entire bowl that is the park and fills it with what you'd call a standing scalar wave. In other words, an energy field that the berm, interestingly, kind of keeps in check, keeps it in place in the bowl. Now, you know, as a kid, you always hear about, you know, Disneyland being the Magic Kingdom, and we were just talking about how, gee, when you go there, even now as an adult, you just get this special feeling. Not so much for me for the last several years, and that's part of what we're going to talk about, but definitely when I was a kid and up until the interesting point in history in which they moved the carousel. This, you heard about this, but you never would have guessed that there was a physical reason, possibly, for why this was so. And my research tells me that this device is the generator of that feeling, because this device spinning in place over the intersection of those ley lines, so to speak, to use them colloquially, those mascons or earth energy lines, generating this energy, it works in conjunction with visual symbols strategically placed throughout the park, specifically in Fantasyland. Things that have to do with the human psyche, things that are connected with the fairy lands, the other dimensions, and things that are deeply rooted in hermeticism and alchemy.
Okay.
And we're talking some real serious sorcery here.
Yeah.
That reaches in on an archetypal level and unlocks levels and levels of consciousness in the human psyche. And I believe that that is what C.V. Wood was attempting to do with his design of Disneyland, was he was creating this device. Not only did he want to build a fun amusement park, he really wanted to build a place that was unlike any other. He really wanted to build a place that would give people an experience beyond just thrill rides and sentimental amusements.
Well, I do know, you know, and we're talking about Disneyland in California, obviously. There is a Disney World in Florida we know of also, which is a whole...
And the carousel...
Yeah.
The carousel at Disney World
yeah.
also sits on an intersection of ley lines.
Really? Well, I was just going to make the comment that, you know, when I was there, I am fresh from Disney World. Long story short on that, my hips were killing me by the end of the 3 days we were there. So I don't know if I experienced any of the wonderful psychical effects, I guess you could call them, of the park. Now, Amber, on the other hand, my girlfriend, it did change her, sir. she loves going there. She loves going there. She knows every inch of that place. So it's like when she got there, she's like, "Don't you feel it, Scott? Don't you feel the Magic Kingdom?" I'm like, "No, I don't. I feel like crap." But no, I mean, it does. You know, people say that Disney, in general, it is that kind of place. You know, and backing up your statement, Walter, that. You know, it is not like any other place you'll ever go to.
Well, you know, Walter, there is another amusement park that's very, very well known in Southern California. I think it's even in Orange County, the Knott's Berry Farm.
Oh, yeah.
Does that have the same effect on people? Was that laid out, you know, with other, you know, similar kind, because I know that it's another destination. It's a place that people go to have fun.
Yeah.
Is there a different feeling or a different, you know, what's the difference between the two? Is there a noticeable difference?
Never like the original Disneyland, and that's not any fault of Knott's Berry Farm, because, as you said, it's been around for years and will continue to be around. It's very popular. It's a fun place. Knott's Berry Farm is a blast, but it does not generate, it just does not leave one with the same feeling. However, that said, I will say that for me, it's the older things at Knott's that tend to have any appeal even close to the Disneyland experience. And where this is significant is that Disney and Knott, they knew each other, of course. They were acquainted. Mm. You know, they'd go out with their wives and they were friends. And they realized that, each one's park helps the other because, you know, it brings people to the area.
Yeah.
And Walter Knott was my sources that I found and am still investigating. Walter Knott was known to be interested in these in extraordinary, strange psychic phenomena.
Yeah.
Now, here's an interesting thing. Knott's Berry Farm owns a place called Calico Ghost Town, which is just about 30 minutes from where I live out here in San Bernardino County.
Okay.
And I just learned, and this blew me away, okay, because I've been going to Calico Ghost Town since I was a little kid, all right? Calico Ghost Town has ghosts, you know, haunting reportings.
Yeah.
And as part of the book, I requested from the National Park Service a tour, that they would lead me on. They'd escort me on at night, you know, just to investigate this. And they ignored me,
mm-hmm.
just flat out ignored my request, which, you know, I think we're talking about. I don't know what their problem was, but it was definitely an attitude problem. And I say that because, you know, I've been a federal civil servant, so, you know, I've earned the right to have an editorial comment on other civil servants. You know, their job is to accommodate things like this because I was going to write about their place, you know. But
I mean, even if they said, oh, no thanks, that's not possible.
They just flat out ignored me.
Yeah.
You know, out of hell with them. But what's interesting is the native tribe that's out there with their property adjacent to Knott's Berry Farm, they do spirit dances and things like that, and people have photographed odd phenomena, you know, for what that's worth, if you believe it, mm-hmm. and I've seen some of these photographs. So a lot of weird things go on out there, but here's the part I didn't know about Knott's Berry Farm is that, I'm sorry, Calico Ghost Town. Mm-hmm. At Calico Ghost Town, a lot of the buildings out there were the original buildings standing in Tombstone, Arizona at the time of the shootout of the OK Corral.
Ooh, interesting.
Walter Knott bought essentially what was standing of Tombstone, old Tombstone, and had it physically moved to be the buildings at Calico to augment, you know, what few buildings there were at the time in Calico.
Okay.
So when you go to Calico from the time it was built, you're actually walking inside and through and amid these structures that were there. Now, what's interesting about that is if you believe places can soak in psychic mm-hmm. impressions of yeah. events and people that were there, that's kind of interesting, you know, to me. But so there's a background and there's, you know, would lead one to believe that Knott was into this stuff. So, you know, why not Disney, you know, if they were friends? There's less evidence that Walt Disney was into this than there is that Walter Knott was into it. And there's less evidence than a lot of superstitious people, mm-hmm. you know, like to believe. And I've heard cited on radio shows and in books that Walt Disney was a 33rd degree Master Mason and all this. Nonsense, he was not.
Oh, okay. I won't lie to you, Walter. I've read a lot of this stuff, too. I mean, especially after we came back, you know, Amber was on the computer nonstop, you know, and it wasn't always about conspiracy stuff. It was the fun stuff, too, you know, the fun little
and
things. You know, so, the Haunted Mansion ride and all the little things involved with that and whatnot.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I may comment, though, I mean, when we're talking about the whole otherworldly experience thing, I mean,
mm-hmm.
it just seems to me that it's a logical thing that these people would be interested in these, you know, that Disney
sure.
himself would have been interested in, because it just look even up to today, present today, all of these films, the films, the parks, the merchant, I mean everything, as we know, it's the ultimate gold mine, right? But everything mm-hmm. is surrounded around extraordinary things, though. I mean, even down to like a talking pig or talking whatever. I mean,
yeah, but
you know, these wild things, right? Go ahead, Walter.
You got to remember, though, that the very nature of kids' stories and fairy tales is that way.
Yeah,
and
okay.
There are a lot of, and as I touch on this in the book, there's a lot of fairy tale books out there that, you know, are just very innocent and wonderful for and little kids. And I'm sure you've heard this. The origins of those fairy tales are very, extremely dark.
Oh, yeah.
And they were cautionary tales of that would rival anything written by Stephen King. I love the origins of the fairy tales. It's just so wonderful that parents long ago would tell these frightening, blood-curdling tales to their children. It reminds me, you know, my dad weaned me on horror movies that kept me up at night and scared the living hell out of me, and I love that. I did the same to my kid when he was 3 years old. You know, it's just a tradition. You do. Scare the hell out of your kids. And let me throw one at you, for instance.
Okay.
A lot of people have heard that, you know, Snow White, you know, it's a much darker tale than what we learn, you know, what we usually hear, that, you know, the stepmother just did terrible things, you know, the witch or whatever. And, you know, here you have these dwarves, right, these little happy little guys that, you know, the worst one's grumpy, but, you know, they're all benevolent and such.
But then
you have, you know, related to them are these gnomes. Now, gnomes are traditionally small little guys with red pointy hats, and, you know, they're mischief makers. You know, don't mess with their things or they'll mess with you. But for the most part, they're these benevolent little Santa Claus-looking guys, right? The deeper you go back in history and lore, the less, you know, happy and nice these gnomes are. They didn't start out to be little. The littling process was something that when subsequent cultures came in, they needed to demean the gods and spirits of the previous culture. So they said, oh, they're tiny little things. When actually, the further you go back in history, gnomes were never known to be tiny little people. They were, you know, 6-7 foot tall men. And the other interesting thing is the little red cone hat, the happy little red hat.
Yeah.
It starts out white, okay? It turns red because these gnomes drink the menstrual blood of virgins from their hats. And over time, that stains the hat red. Think of that next time you see the Travelocity commercial. You know, I mean, and when you see a garden gnome in somebody's little garden next to the petunias and you see that red pointy hat, it's red because of the blood of virgins. That's the origin of that. So you're talking about, you know, these tales which, you know, the farther you go back, they have these darker origins, and it's for a purpose. And the purpose, when you get into that, is even more fascinating. But over the years, they've been whitewashed and softened up to where they're, you know, little nursery tales and we tell them to entertain the kiddies. And, you know, the nature of somebody retelling one of these stories, they may not be aware of this, you know, and so they're telling the story from the perfectly harmless point of view and intention, and then unfortunately someone comes along and once they learn the dark past of these, then suddenly they start saying that Walt Disney was actually, you know, poisoning children's minds with this stuff, when I say no, the man was really telling these tales from a more innocent point of view. I'd say if anybody knew what the origin of this lore was involved with Disneyland, it was C.V. Wood, the man who physically designed and engineered the park.
There is going to be so much to learn from your book.
God, there is. This is fantastic.
Latitude 33, Key to the Kingdom. Do you
it's
know,
good to hear a different viewpoint. Cause like
we're down to less than a minute.
Well,
less
Walter, like we
hour,
said,
which is amazing.
You know, there is a lot of conspiracy talk around Walt Disney and the parks and whatnot. And it's just really cool to hear a different take on this and something that's very interesting based on some science, too, which I think is really, really awesome. So looking forward to checking this book out. I think it's going to be really fantastic. Doug, I'm sorry to didn't mean to blow you over there.
No. Oh, that's fine. The website, of course, is stores.lulu.com/lostcontinentlive. Of course, that is linked up at our site if
yes.
you go in the archives or the past guest pages.
Yep.
And the book is free.
Oh, yeah. By the way, we should mention that, too.
Oh,
yeah. Okay, I'm sorry.
We probably
about
should
that.
Have said that.
Yeah,
giving it away.
Yeah, this can be downloaded. I'm very sorry. You know, one thing I didn't put in the notes here, this thing can be downloaded from this particular page, this website, this link that we've been giving out. You can download it right from there, right, Walter?
Yes, you can. And the reason I'm doing that is, you know, so many people in the field of strange phenomena and such, they're trying to sell you something. I want to share this information. I think it's important for certain information to get out there, so I'm giving this away.
Well, that makes you our best friend, Walter, because that's what we do with this show, is we give away this show.
Exactly.
It's the same exact
this
thing.
Show is giving
Sorry,
away.
Sorry, I mentioned that earlier. Yeah, we should definitely mention that you can go to http://stores.lulu.com/lostcontinentlive, L-I-B, and you can download a PDF of this particular book, which is Latitude 33, Key to the Kingdom. You can get the whole thing right there and check it out. So everybody should just shoot over there and do that. I mean, that's a definite right there.
Well, Walter, if you had a good time, I would love for you to come back on eventually.
Yeah,
because
sure.
We only scratched the surface, and I think we could learn so much just talking to you. You've really, really studied this. It's amazing.
We got to go to break, though, unfortunately. Walter, can you hang on the line for us for 1 second?
Sure.
Hang tight.
Mm-hmm.
All right, coming up, guys.
That's right, Ruben Perez Jr.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about, what do we got here?
The Butterfly's Apprentice.
Can you tell we're totally just like,
We need aspirin.
We're having to read stuff tonight. This sucks. When we come back on the other side of the break, are we talking to Ruben Perez Jr. about the
Butterfly's Apprentice?
Yeah, here, I have to push buttons. Doug.
Just push it, and we're going to go to the commercial. We'll be right back.
Miss a live broadcast? Feel free to download it direct from the on-demand archives at ghostlytalk.com.